Mass transportation in Indianapolis is changing with the pending launch of the city's first rapid transit bus line. How does a city, region, or state work to move transportation systems in the right direction? What steps has Indianapolis taken to get to this point? I'm Jill Sheridan. Today on All In, we'll talk to people involved in Indy's transit successes, struggles still facing the region, and look to the future of mass transit in Indiana. We'd love to hear from you. What are your experiences as the red line comes to life? What would you like to see happen in your community when it comes to mass transportation? Is a successful transit system an important piece of the puzzle? Comment on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. First, this news. Thanks for joining us today on All In. I'm Jill Sheridan, in for host Matt Pelzer. In recent years, the push for a better mass transit system in Indianapolis has been the focus of many discussions. The Indigo Red Line Bus Rapid Transit comes after years of planning, policy, advocacy, and engineering. So what has your experience been as we look to the launch day for the Red Line? We would love to hear from you on Facebook or Twitter. You can join us All In Indiana. And joining me today in studio is Lauren Day, Director of Public Relations at Indigo. Thank you, Lauren, so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I know you've been very busy in recent months getting all this off the ground and really looking forward to, you know, an exciting launch September 1st, correct?
September 1st.
So talk a little bit about, you know, the genesis. Just in recent years, you know, we got the federal funding, and, you know, how has it been, you know, getting this off the ground here in Indianapolis?
It's very exciting. We're 19 days away. September 1st, we open with free rides all of September. So I'm going to plug that as often as I can. So we applied for a Small Starts federal grant for the Red Line. We received 75% of the funding for the project. And that included a lot of infrastructure work that was done. So those of you who have been following along with the construction, we are grateful for your patience. Now we're really up to the punch list at just the stations. But a lot of the improvements that were made to the roadway, to the sidewalks, drainage, that was all included in that funding. We wanted to make the experience for the transit riders and the impact to the environment all improved with it. So, yeah, it's been a lot. We had a voter referendum in 2016, and I know we'll talk later in the show about that. And that has allowed us to invest in bringing improvements to the local routes as well. So the Red Line is opening on September 1st. It's a very high-profile, exciting project, the first rapid transit line here in Indianapolis. But we're also able to invest in the local routes. So starting September 1, we're going to have every route running every day. And then next summer, we'll see significant improvements to local routes as well. So increasing that frequency, that's how often buses come. And one of the big tenets of the Red Line is that it's going to come to every station every 10 minutes. So that gets you away from having to rely on a paper schedule, and you can just trust that the bus is always going to come.
That's been an issue in the past here in Indianapolis, hasn't it? I mean, you know, frequency, mm-hmm. and what are some of the other, you know, issues that we've had when we're trying to, you know, launch a better bus system?
Absolutely. So we have some routes that only come every 30, 60, even sometimes 2 hours on the weekends, and that becomes difficult to rely on. And if you do rely on it, you are traveling for a long period of time, you're waiting, makes it difficult to transfer. So we made improvements with opening the transit center downtown, making those transfers and the customer service experience better. And by running every route every day and improving our routing, bus stop spacing, how frequently many of the routes are coming, those improvements are going to start on September 1st. And many of them are going to come again next summer. And actually, we started investing in the number of trips that our routes were taking. So added weekend and evening service last year as well. But that voter referendum allowed resources to make that possible.
Now, that voter referendum, you know, was allowed clear voice from the community that, yes, we want better mass transportation opportunities in Indianapolis. And I know you've been very aggressive, you know, soliciting feedback and thoughts from the community. How important has that process been? How many public meetings? What have you been hearing?
So public engagement is critical for Indigo, and we are committed to doing this whether we have a big project or we're sort of business as usual. The referendum was leading up to it was a really especially heavy time for public outreach. We worked closely with partners who were kind of doing more of the advocacy side, and we were the subject matter experts. We were the educators. I think on average we had 3 engagements a day, whether that be a one-on-one meeting, a presentation, a stakeholder meeting. So it was very busy there that year leading up to the vote in November of 2016. And we really haven't stopped yet. So after that, it was significant outreach about what is the construction going to mean for you, you know, working with businesses, working with residents, neighborhood associations all along the route, answering questions. And now it's really leading up to the opening and how to ride. What does the traffic mean? How is my local route going to change? What are the investments that we're making there as well?
So let's get into some of those logistics. How much does it cost first? You know, when it is the free month is gone, will people need to have cards and ID? How do you get on?
Lots of questions. Yes. So if you've seen any of the stations out there, you board the stations at a pedestrian crosswalk. So while there are center platforms, it's very safe to get there. You will cross at a crosswalk. Stations south of downtown are curbside stations. So you will just board. There's a nice ramp to get up to the station. At the stations themselves, there are ticket vending machines. So you'll be able to purchase a reloadable card, or you'll actually have a mobile application that we're going to launch later this fall. So those are 2 ways that you can pay before you get on. The cost is the same as the rest of the system. So we like making sure that people know the Red Line is just another type of service that Indigo provides. So you can easily transfer between the local routes and the rapid transit. So right now it's $1.75 to ride for a trip, and we're introducing free 2-hour transfers. And then it's $4 for a day. And one of the other things that we're able to introduce with the technology of the new fare system that's coming online is fare capping, which is an incredibly equitable way of giving you the best value for your trip. So instead of, you know, if you ride every day, for instance, but buying a 31-day pass up front is cost prohibitive, you end up paying more than you would if you could afford that 31-day pass up front. So by setting a fare cap, which is really just sort of a ceiling above which you won't have to pay, we can say, you know, if you ride often, you will never pay more than the equivalent of 9 trips within a transit week.
And I know drivers have a lot of questions as well, and they've certainly seen the changes up and down College and Meridian. Right now you're giving a little bit of a lean time for drivers to sort of figure this out. How's it going?
So it's been, you know, this is a change, absolutely, in the built environment. And it's nice to have this month between when really we had the roadway construction complete and when we're going to be open for service for drivers and bus riders and bicyclists and pedestrians to really learn what is this new configuration. We have animated videos online. It's always worth plugging those at indigo.net. And those show every corridor and what the road configuration looks like. What is it going to mean? Where's the bus? Where do I turn? How does that work? But by and large, follow the same rules that you know now, right? You don't cross a solid white line. If you see red, that's an indication that that's bus only. Hash marks mean that that's a shared bus and travel lane, especially on Capitol southbound. Buses share that left-hand turn at signalized intersections. The other change people will notice, he's smiling at me over here, the other change people will notice is some left-hand turn restrictions. So this is really for the safety of drivers and for the buses, that we really need you to turn left at a protected signal at intersections. So especially along Meridian and College, you may need to travel a bit further north or south and make that protected U-turn to come back to get into the business or your driveway. And that's because crossing over a bus lane really means you're crossing over several lanes of traffic and that bus is coming every 10 minutes. So there is a median there that is a deterrent for just drivers. Buses can easily get over it, and our public safety partners can easily mount it as well.
Because you've worked closely with public safety to make sure there's a plan as well in place for fire and police.
Yes, we have a full operations plan for Red Line. You know, that includes where are the safety call boxes, what does snow removal look like, how do we train operators for incidents management, all of that kind of stuff. And then safety is a component of that, and we worked with our public safety partners, IMPD, IEMS, and IFD, to ask them, really, what do you want our bus operators to do when there is an emergency? And so our buses will be stopping, so they will be doing what the rest of traffic does. So if you're a driver, operate the same way that you do now.
And the bus is going to run from Broad Ripple to the University of Indianapolis when it starts service on September 1st. You know, talk a little bit about how much faster it's going to be between those two locations than it previously was.
So we have rapid transit infrastructure between Broader Bull and the University of Indianapolis, but actually every other bus will travel north to the county line and then south to the county line as well. So there is continued service along those routes for those who rely on the local service there. But between Broader Bull and University of Indianapolis, right, we have buses coming every 10 minutes to those stations. We have real-time screens at the stations that will count down the minutes, you know, until the bus arrives for you. And it is going to be competitive to driving. Because we have those bus-only lanes, it allows the bus to maintain that headway, so maintain that on-time performance, and gets the bus out of the way of traffic and traffic out of the way of the bus. So elevated boarding, that's the stations are raised, they will meet up with the bus. That, again, allows for that frequent, reliable service. So it will certainly be competitive to driving. And if you're not driving, you can be reading, you can email, you can meditate at the end of the day, you can do whatever you'd like and let somebody else get you there.
About how long is the time?
So it should be about the same time as driving time. And then if, you know, if traffic is more congested during, say, either a special event or just a particular time of day, it may actually be a bit faster to use rapid transit.
Nice. Why did it make sense to do the Red Line first?
So the Red Line route covers one section of our highest ridership corridor right now. And it also covers the densest part of our county. So from both a jobs and residents. So looking at the built environment, how is the built environment conducive to transit use? So that kind of dense, walkable environment, especially that you see along College and then down between Fountain Square and Fletcher Place, those are really conducive to transit ridership. Between 18th and 38th Street, it's about 15% of our ridership right now along that corridor. We have three routes that run up Meridian Street right now. So that made a lot of sense to improve that service. And by having a north-south rapid transit line, you can feed in rapid transit or more frequent lines, excuse me, moving east and west that can then move people north and south along the county. So it made a lot of sense to be the first rapid transit line. And then the other two that will follow then follow our next two highest ridership and densest corridors.
Yeah, briefly touch on what the plans are for the next two.
Sure. So the purple line follows largely Route 39, if you're familiar with the route. So it's north on Meridian Street and then east on 38th Street, and then it will go north on Post Road. And so that is a very high ridership corridor for us right now, and a portion that was built originally around transit. And then the blue line is Washington Street. So from the airport on the west side to Cumberland on the east side. So again, there's a lot of excitement around not only moving those who work out at the airport and FedEx, those facilities out there, more reliably to work, but also thinking about our visitors and those of us who travel, being able to get out to the airport. And then Washington Street is a very high ridership corridor for us.
I think that's huge, out to the airport and advancing Indianapolis to a world-class city. So lots of plans for the grand opening. We just have a brief time, but real quick, what's happening
certainly
on the grand opening?
So we open on September 1st, which is Sunday, but we're inviting everyone who would like to come celebrate with us Tuesday, September 3rd. The morning between 7:30 and 9, there's going to be a celebration on the lawn at the State House, the East Lawn. There'll be some speakers, music, some coffee there. And then we're collaborating with the Arts Council and Square Cat Vinyl, and we're going to have local musicians at many of the stations the whole opening week. So we'll have that schedule out soon, so you'll be able to hear some good music while you're waiting to ride.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you.
We're going to invite Lauren to stay for our second segment when we explore how mass transit, or the lack of, is impacting greater central Indiana regions beyond Indianapolis and why it's important to create this type of infrastructure. I'm Jill Sheridan, in for Matt Pelzer. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook or Twitter. All in Indiana. Back in 2 minutes. And welcome back to All In. Today we're exploring mass transit in Indiana. The capital city is about to launch the Red Line. What does that mean for other central Indiana suburbs? Studies suggest that investment in transit is worth it. But there's strong evidence to suggest that the economic benefits are there, too. So why are we so hesitant sometimes to buy in? Are we way too stuck in our car culture? Big questions. Kim Irwin, making a face, Executive Director of Health by Design, joining us in studio. Thank you so much for being here, Kim.
Thanks for having me.
And also Rick Cockrum, CERTA lobbyist. Rick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jill.
And we're welcoming back Lauren Day with Indigo. She's going to be sitting in for this segment as well when we're talking about Looking beyond Indianapolis a little bit, I know this work, you know, it's in the wheels. It's moving, you know, and we've been looking at this for many years and talking about, you know, how we can move Indianapolis forward and beyond into the suburbs and into the central Indiana region. Kim, you're the director of Health by Design. Could you talk, you know, how transportation plays into the creation of vibrant communities where people want to live?
Yes, absolutely. So as our name implies, it's about health by design. And unfortunately, we have built our environment, our built environment, in a way for many decades now that really serves as a barrier to healthy, active living. So when we think about that intersection of the built environment and public health, we are talking about really four primary impacts. Opportunities for physical activity. We know that when people have transportation options that allow walking and biking and transit, they use them and they get more physical activity as a result. They're healthier. Safety is a huge piece, ensuring that people who are walking, biking, and riding transit are safe in our transportation system. The environmental aspects are significant, and transit service specifically plays a big role in that. And then it's about having access, literally access to medical care. Many people don't, and there's vast research around the limitations of that. But then also access to healthy food, access to a job, access to social and civic opportunities. So really widespread, and then extends to all of those other what we call social determinants of health, things like housing and crime and violence, education, and all of those things that contribute to keeping us healthy.
Really
big picture,
big issues, and Indianapolis, and you know, in the surrounding area, like you said, we haven't built that environment, and so it might be more difficult for us, you know, get off the ground here in the 21st century. Maybe that's, you know, part of the issue that we're looking at. Rick, you've been deeply engaged in the past few years with legislation, looking at, you know, the state lawmakers allowing for referendum at the local level to fund transit. What was this process like, you know, when you started working on this 5 years ago, 6 years ago? What were you hearing?
Well, there's the central Indiana legislators are recognizing, as is the mayor and the surrounding mayors and county officials, that our competition for economic growth is our other regions. It's not just a city. It's the central Indiana area. And so they are looking at quality of life issues, and transportation is one of those. One of the data points that I came across in lobbying on this is 50% of 19-year-olds in America do not own a vehicle and aren't interested in owning a vehicle. And you take that into consideration, and plus the people that Kim mentioned, disabled, people that can't drive, elderly, veterans, what have you. There's a demand for mass transit, and the central Indiana legislators recognize that. The rest of the state struggles with the concept. We're an agricultural state still. There's some resistance to, quote, the subsidizing mass transit, but in reality, we subsidize airports, we subsidize rail, we subsidize roads. Transportation is a public convenience and a public asset, and so it's not unusual to use tax dollars for public benefit.
When specifically with the legislation, talk about, you know, what that did for the future of mass transportation. We know it allowed, you know, for referendum.
Well, it recognized seven counties that could put on the ballot to increase an income tax, and that's a pretty big hurdle. A lot of communities around the country took two or three efforts before they passed it. The Indianapolis Marin County voters passed it the first time, and I think the margins were into the 60 percentile. So it was pretty well received without a really heavy campaign. So that just told us what we were hearing. CERTA had done about 150 town hall meetings leading up to the 2014 legislation, and we got a lot of feedback from the public. The vote tallies suggested that people were willing to pay a 0.25% income tax. And there's some benefits not only of the riders, but if you reduce air pollution, you get congestion off the roads, you increase economic development, younger people more attracted to come into your community because you have this transportation network. So there are a lot of positives.
I think we have all probably heard that, you know, that we have to have this in place if we want to attract young talent to the Central Indiana region. Kim, have you heard that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the evidence is even more clear over the last few years since the State House legislation and the referendum was held in 16 that it's critical for employers as well. I think the Amazon H2Q initiative sort of put that front and center. Certainly lots more to it than just transit, but it really put forth how critical transportation options are to that quality of life, not just for worker mobility and getting people to jobs, but to allow families and others beyond the immediate worker to be able to move around in their community.
We know that, you know, thousands of people are coming from the suburbs into Indianapolis and vice versa. And, you know, worker shortage is something very real on the minds of, you know, lawmakers and companies and lots of people here in Indianapolis. How important is it?
Well, it's very important. And to that point, CERTA right now is running a program where they're helping people get to work, and we're running shuttle services. People are going to the warehouse district near Plainfield, to companies up in the Whitestown area. So they're residents of Indianapolis that are getting public assistance, transportation assistance to get to those jobs, and vice versa. You hear from the surrounding communities. They desperately need workers, and this is to help workers get there.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just all about getting people into Marion County. Absolutely. It's about moving them out as well. And you mentioned Plainfield, and I know that the Purple Line, right, Lauren, or the Blue Line?
The Blue Line would go to the airport.
To Plainfield. Am I correct in saying that Plainfield is considering or is going to have a referendum then,
yes,
in 2020?
Well, the original legislation not only allowed counties to put it on the ballot, recognizing that some of the – even our adjacent counties are pretty rural when you get out away from the city. It was amended late in the session to allow township referendum. So Guilford Township was added in the statute a couple of years ago, which is Plainfield, and it's my understanding that they're discussing putting that on the ballot. And it further envisions that if a township does this, then an adjacent township beyond that can also do it. So the concept is it would be built out as it grew in popularity.
And building out the red line is something that's still in the works.
That's correct. So Indigo will take it to the county lines. But then, you know, what Rick's talking about here is that we need those adjacent townships or counties to come in with dedicated funding and really a transit plan to hook into that so that we can really have this regional transportation network.
Because we need everyone to buy in for the sustainability as well, right?
Absolutely. Yes. I would just add to the points that – yes, this regional approach and really looking at this to serve employment centers and destination centers throughout the region is critical. It's amazing what we've been able to do with Indigo and how important that is as a first step. But I'm very hopeful, and I think from an advocacy perspective, we remain optimistic that we will get to regional solutions and that we will see cross-county transit within a reasonable period of time here.
Rick, with the people that you've talked to and the work that you've done, you know, why are some communities possibly hesitant about, you know, investing in mass transit?
Well, Americans in general and Hoosiers in particular love their vehicles. And and change has always come slow, especially in this state. Again, there's a perception of a subsidy. I've heard with legislators, well, will it pay for itself? Well, if it paid for itself, the private sector would be doing it. And as I've said, all the other forms of transportation are subsidized. The state is not – it's not unusual at all in agricultural areas to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on a bridge that may only serve a handful of families. But that's what you do, because we're all in this together. And so there's more and more acceptance. I think the vote surprised a lot of legislators. The attitude was sort of like, you know what, we'll put it on the ballot. It'll probably fail. Well, it didn't. Guess what? People said we want it, and we're willing to pay for it. And so I think that sent a strong message to the legislature. And they get it. I mean, you're talking later on about the South Shore expansion. The General Assembly put money into that. The governor supported it. That's in the Chicago area, but it's still part of Indiana. And we're investing heavily in a rail system up there to get people to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when we're talking about investing, Kim, maybe what if we don't move forward with mass transit options? You know, what does that mean for Indiana? I mean, in, you know, a couple decades, I mean, it would really put us behind, possibly.
Absolutely. Yes, I think that is certain. And I think that, you know, we expanding a bit beyond transit, we're at really a critical time in many ways as a country and as a world, right? Environmental, climate change factors are real and they are significant and we are seeing them now. And other aspects, right? Income inequality, things that really make our communities very difficult for some people and certain people within to, you know, live a high standard, a quality of life and to be able to do the things that they want to do for themselves and their families. And transit and other mechanisms like that, transportation options are a tool in addressing those things, right? Transportation options covers a wealth of problems, if you will. The environmental aspect. We know that transportation sector contributes significantly, particularly in urban areas, to air pollution. We can improve that by taking cars off the roadway and having more service, getting, again, people to jobs where they can earn a wage that allows them to live without other support, that kind of thing. Getting people to educational opportunities where they can better their long-term, you know, earning potential. And so not to mention the health savings, obviously, which is key to us. So I think, you know, we've certainly from Health by Design's perspective and the work that we do, this is very much about taking a long view and knowing that the dollars we're investing today have a payoff. We might not see it tomorrow. We might not see it next year. But if we don't invest now, not only are we not setting ourselves up for that return on investment, but we're actually costing ourselves more in the long run.
What do you think we as a state, as a region, might do to better, you know, change people's opinions of mass transportation? I mean, I think that we are kind of stuck in that culture and that, you know, it might be fine for somebody else, but I'm not getting out of my car. I'm guilty.
I'm looking at Lauren because the answer to that is be successful, which I firmly believe we will. I'm excited about it. I would like to point out that it was not only the elected officials in the region that got behind this, but the Chamber of Commerce was very much involved. The Indianapolis Realtors very much involved. And then a lot of nonprofits, of the Julian Center to AARP, Arc of Indiana. I think we had 140 letters of support from different agencies, church groups, what have you, that just said this is what our community needs. And I think that that momentum was very helpful as well. So the business community is very engaged and invested because they see this as an economic development opportunity as well. And I think when the rest of the state sees that, I'm excited about the opening of the Red Line because I think the rest of the surrounding communities are looking at it like, how can we be part of that?
Success. Mm-hmm. We hear from Josh on Facebook who says he strongly supports public transit in Indianapolis, but he's curious why there's no plans for a park and ride, or are there plans for park and ride for people that might want to take the bus or their car to Broad Ripple and then into the city?
So we're actually getting this question pretty frequently, which I find actually exciting because people are starting to think, oh, I really would like to use it. So in the built environment that exists within this first phase of the Red Line, it is for those who are within walking, biking, or transit ridership to transfer onto the Red Line. There is really not that space for park and ride. And if you look at kind of the model for a park and ride, it's you have to look at the number of people that are moving and how far someone would travel to meet kind of that terminus of a transit line. But I will say for the Blue Line, in those designs, we have built in two park and ride locations, knowing traffic to and from the airport. And the length of the Blue Line, would probably warrant some interest in park and ride.
Last week, I believe, there was a tweet that went semi-viral. And you can weigh into the conversation today on Facebook or Twitter. Find us at All in Indiana. This was Seth Johnson writing to someone that was complaining about the Red Line and saying that as a visually impaired man, the rapid bus line is going to change his life. And while it might be an inconvenience to some right now when we get it up and running, for you to empathize, he's asking for people to empathize with himself and others who really, really need this service. Did you hear about that one?
Oh, absolutely.
but it raises a really important question, just a comment about, you know, people that really do truly need this, you know, not just people that might be disabled, but senior citizens.
We had a very compelling testimony when the legislation was being heard from universities, employers, medical centers. But one of the one that stuck in my mind was a woman that rode an hour and a half one way to be a nurse's aide at a nursing home. So she was investing in over 3 hours a day to get to an 8-hour job. And when you hear people like that talking about the need for public transportation, it's pretty compelling.
Yeah. Yeah. And we know that about 79% of Indy's senior citizens have poor transit access. I think that's, Kim, particularly important for our aging population.
Definitely. I think I mentioned it quickly, but we tend to not think about the mental and emotional social health aspects of isolation and not having the ability to move about in our community, to meet up with friends, to engage in volunteer activities, that kind of thing. And for people who don't have the ability to get in a car and drive from point A to point B, and about a third of the population doesn't, we know that. Having transit that works and that connects to the places they need to go is a lifeline, truly a lifeline to health and well-being.
And when we're looking beyond, you know, we often hear city leaders, businesses saying that, you know, we're creating a world-class city, that Indianapolis needs to be a world-class city. And I think it's encouraging for people to understand and accept more that mass transportation really has to be a part of that puzzle. Is that what you're hearing?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And as well?
Yes. And I'll just add, and again, Rick highlighted this, touched on it, but, you know, we all pay for fire service and police service, whether we use it or not. Many of us don't have children in schools, but we contribute to our educational systems because that is for the good of our community, right? And and we have long thought that about our roadways and other types of economic development. But for whatever reason, transit and trails and sidewalks have sort of been left out of that idea that we're in it together, and it's a shared resource, right? It is good for all of us. And I think, hopefully, I appreciated the empathy part of the tweet that you referenced, because I think that hopefully putting it out there, this is a growing recognition that even if it's not good for me personally, it is helpful for others. And in turn, I benefit from that.
And so plans are still in the works to expand the Red Line and have the Purple and Blue Line. A lot of pieces need to fall into place, though.
That's correct, and all the local route improvements. So, you know, the Red Line, again, is getting a lot of attention, but we are investing in bringing every route every day, coming more often, making those transfers easier. You know, and I'll just add that it's not an Indigo project in a vacuum, mm-hmm. right? This is about how do we improve the quality of life, access to opportunity, what are those education job opportunities that you can better reach? Who can you see in your family? How do you get to fresher food? Mm-hmm. And how can you go car light or really reduce your car usage? Because we're growing in population and we're not growing in roadway space, and we need to take better care of our environment and really make those decisions now.
Thank you all for joining today. All in. Welcome back to All In. Today we're talking mass transportation. I'm Jill Sheridan, in for host Matt Pelser. Indiana used to have a thriving train system, but now our railways are few and far between. The Hoosier State Line ran between Indianapolis and Chicago and ended service this past summer after $3 million in funding was cut out of the state budget. Another rail line, though, in the northern part of the state continues to thrive. We would love to hear from you listening today on Facebook or Twitter. We can accept your comments. Find us All in Indiana. Joining me in studio, Todd Barton, who is the mayor of Crawfordsville. Hi, Todd.
Hi.
Thanks so much for joining today.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And also on the phone today joining us, Michael Nolan, who is the president of South Shore Line. Michael, are you there? No. Well, hopefully we'll be able to connect with Michael shortly. When we look at the Hoosier State Line and what happened there, give us a little bit of history. I know that, you know, the state line struggled for quite a bit of time. And
it did.
And we tried to, you know, beef it up in a number of ways. For your community, for Crawfordsville, the state line made a stop in Crawfordsville. Talk about, you know, what that meant for your community.
Well, it's hugely important, you know, and the number one thing driving what we are doing today, we talk about the workforce issue a lot. And in order to solve that and make sure we can supply the workforce that our employers need to stay in our community, we have to attract new residents. But more importantly, we have to keep the next generation at home. And we have to keep them from, you know, migrating to those more urban areas. And when we look at what the next generation wants, mass transit, public transportation is very high on that list. So, you know, when you look at something like the Hoosier State, you can say, well, you know, what's the loss there? You have to measure it in the short term, which, you know, the sun comes up tomorrow and life goes on. But the long-term impact, I think, is much more profound.
What was the investment that, you know, Crawfordsville was making?
So we were, you know, the investment, basically, if you took the operational cost, the state through NDOT was paying about 50%, and then the local communities along the route were paying the other 50. Of that 50, it was prorated out based on ridership. So Crawfordsville was around 15% of that. So we were paying just shy of $60,000 a year to have that service in our community. And you know, we had good partners with Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, and Rensselaer.
When you found out that the Hoosier State Line would be ending, what was your thoughts?
You know, not terribly surprised, just unfortunate the way that it ended. I don't think there's been good communication between the state officials from NDOT to the locals. I would like to see that communication, you know, a lot better, a lot smoother, a lot more information flowing. And, you know, I think we're in a situation now that, you know, all is not lost. I think a lot has been learned from that, and I think it has laid the groundwork for future things to happen. And we are all very cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
I don't think it's over. I don't think the story is done.
No, and we hope, you know, that we will be able to find more funding and we will be able to get the line rolling again, because it seems like, you know, there is a real need for it. We hear from people all the time that, you know, they want this option. Again, we're talking about, you know, the younger generation,
right,
as well.
Right.
And
absolutely.
In other states, you know, they have rail lines that are thriving.
They are. And you know, in this case, I don't think it was just that, you know, that the demand wasn't there. I think there were so many operational problems. You know, many times we felt as partners that we were kind of trying to win this battle with our hands tied behind our back. And, you know, if you fix some of those things and you shorten the time, you know, this could really thrive and do well. And I think we've laid the groundwork for that.
Yeah. Talk about, you know, some of the issues. It didn't have the best, you know, schedule.
Schedule was tough. The time was too long. But if you look at that, you know, if you're losing about 40 minutes in Indianapolis, you're losing an hour in Chicago just getting that through the maze of, you know, what happens in Chicago. And keeping in mind that you were on the freight rails in Chicago, you weren't on those high speed, you know, corridors where they move people all day. So between those two, you added quite a bit of time to the trip. You know, you were on freight rail lines most of the time, and the cooperation, you know, it is what it is. The cooperation between Amtrak and those host railroads was not always the best. And so you would have, you know, the passenger train getting stuck behind freight trains and things like that. So all those things added up to kind of create a situation where we were destined to not really succeed. But I think a lot was learned.
Yeah, joining us now on the phone, Michael Nolan, president of South Shore Line. Michael, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining. So we're talking about the Hoosier State Line, which ended, but now we're talking to you about the South Shore Line, which provides service in northwest Indiana. You know, your commuter rail runs between Millennium Station in downtown Chicago and the South Bend International Airport. What keeps your line running?
Well, we're really two railroads in one. From Millennium Station to South Bend International Airport, it's 90 miles. It's more of an inner city kind of route. From Michigan City to Chicago is more of a commuter route. So we really have two distinct types of passengers. We run a lot of commuter service in and out of Chicago, supporting the business community on a daily basis. It's probably our bread and butter, you know, the 8-to-5 or so workforce. Supplementing that, we have a lot of discretionary travel, off-peak, evening, and weekends. And there certainly are business work. There's workforce that works, second or third shift. We provide transportation for that as well. But the core of the South Shore passenger revenue and ridership comes from that support of the Chicago business market.
What does ridership look like today?
We're running at about 3.5 million passenger trips per year. We were up at around 4.2 million right before the Great Recession. What we found after the Great Recession is that companies retooled, a lot of the administrative type jobs went away, and then some of the ridership loss that we've incurred is not the loss of the rider, it's the change in the dynamic in the workforce. my daughter and son-in-law both have one work-at-home day per week, and they're about to get two. So I have the same person riding my train, but they're not riding 5 days a week anymore. They're riding 3 or 4 days a week. So we're constantly competing to, and we still have the opportunity to make inroads and bring people out of their cars and onto our trains. And it's really one of the reasons behind some of the major capital infrastructure projects we've got going is it's time to market, it's frequency that drives the ability to attract people onto the transportation system.
That was what was always holding my mother-in-law back from going to Chicago, from coming from Chicago into Indianapolis on the Hoosier right. State Line, was just the frequency and not being able to catch train when she wanted to. We do hear from Dave on Facebook, who says he's an engineer for Amtrak based in Indianapolis, and he wants to understand a little bit more why the state refused to fund the Hoosier State Line service in light of this conversation. And funding is complicated, and up in Northwest Indiana, in the northern part of the state, you have more political will. Is that correct, Michael?
You know, it really came together in a fairly remarkable fashion. The four-county service area that supports the double-track project got behind, they first got behind our Westlake project, which is an 8-mile extension from the South Shore Line running down the Illinois-Indiana border from Hammond to Dyer. And then on the heels of that, they came behind the double-tracking of the mainline South Shore project. And we were able to really coalesce a four-county support group of elected officials, stakeholders from all facets of life, the business community, and then the General Assembly was interested in the project because we showed tremendous return on investment through transit-oriented development that we expect to occur in and around the station, somewhere north of $2.5 billion over the next 20 years. Just by leveraging the asset where that hadn't been leveraged in the past. So that generated substantial interest in the State House, and then we got the governor saw the importance of these projects and made it one of his number one priorities. So we really generated a tremendous amount of momentum and support. In 2017, when the double track project was up for funding, the legislature voted 145-5 to support the funding of the project. It didn't just happen. It takes a long time. The Westlake project started in conceptual form in 1990. We're nearly 30 years after that. So it doesn't happen overnight. The double track project's been a major priority of the South Shore for decades. The timing was just right, and the momentum got us here. But it took a lot of hard work and a lot of years of planning and support.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's just because the infrastructure and the population is already in place. That must be a large piece of the puzzle.
I think that's a big factor. Yeah, absolutely. You know, in our case, you know, I'm not sure the legislature has always understood the need in rural Indiana, but I think they're starting to. I think things are changing, and we're behind, you know, obviously where they're at with the South Shore, but I think things are coming along.
We hear from Andrew on Facebook, who says, we all know our interstate system is overcrowded even when you're traveling on 65, you know, between
Chicago. 65 is not fun.
It's not. Will we ever get a rail system, he pines, that connects all of our cities, like the Metro in Chicago? Having lived up there, you know, we hear this all the time from people that have been in the Chicago metropolitan area, how convenient, how easy, how much it is worth the investment.
It is. And, you know, and I think part of it, too, and you were just talking to the folks here in Indianapolis, but that has to be a piece of this puzzle as well. For people to commute into Indianapolis, I have to know that the transportation within Indianapolis is reliable. I know it is when I get to Chicago. I can get to wherever I need to go. Coming to Indianapolis, it's much more unpredictable, and that has to be part of this.
So with the expansion coming in Northwest Indiana, the Westlake Corridor, the double track, what do you anticipate this means for communities?
Well, I can tell you that a part of the process involved creating transit development districts, giving the communities the opportunities to create TIF zones to encourage the private sector development that we really envision is going to reshape a lot of the communities up here and provide opportunities for the millennials, is an example, who really want to be able to travel to and from job, recreation, hospitals, whatever in their lives. They want to be able to do it seamlessly, conveniently, without cars. And so to be able to develop housing, retail, office space in and around the train stations is something that these transit development districts are being done in and around the communities up and down the South Shore line and the proposed line along Westlake. So that is a key element of what's being done now. That's being spearheaded by the Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority is their key task in developing the being the development arm of this project.
So with that 20-year plan, maintenance, investment, and the existing rail, it's a major priority.
Correct.
Mayor Barton, when we're, you know, thinking about hopefully, you know, redeveloping the Hoosier State Line, you know, what does that process look like? You know, do we go back to the legislature? Do we really call on the community? How can we move forward?
That's a good question. You know, I think those of us in the local communities are asking that question right now, and we're waiting for some input and some direction from both the legislature and NDOT on that issue. But obviously, we need some time to absorb what's happened and really look at those lessons learned and try to eliminate the weaknesses that existed, you know, in the former route. I think that'll get done. I think they're hearing loud and clear from the outlying communities that this is important. And it's not just important to Crawfordsville, Lafayette, West Lafayette. It's important to everybody in that region and can really help set an example for the other regions of the state. We hear a lot from Cincinnati. You know, they want to be tied into Indianapolis and Chicago, and you think about looking into Ohio. So, you know, I think it's going to take a year or two for this to play out, but I do think we're headed in the right direction.
Michael, what advice? I mean, again, we talked a little bit about just changing that car culture, the mentality. You know, obviously you've done that somewhat in the northern part of the state. What will it take to sort of reach Hoosiers that are hesitant to get on board with mass transportation?
You know, I mentioned that we're two different railroads in one. The South Bend community, they're 90 miles away from Chicago. It's more of the inner city route. The goal for the South Shore Line is to get their commute down to 90 minutes, 90 miles in 90 minutes. They then see the connectivity of the business community, in addition to potential trips for individuals, whether it's work or business back and recreation back and forth. It's really connecting the business communities. And so the message needs to be it's really about connectivity to and unlocking the potential between the regions and some of our larger economic engines, whether it's Indianapolis or Chicago or Cincinnati, and what's the value in keeping? I mean, we've been stagnant in our population up here in Northwest Indiana. We do a great job of educating our children, but we export our talent the moment they're educated. We have to give them a reason to stay here. We're maintaining our population just by getting older, but that's not a long term success strategy. So, you know, what we need to do is to continue to look at transit as an asset to our quality of life and to our economic survival and improvement. That's kind of what we have been communicating up here in the northwest part of the state, and I think it's resonated with so many people.
And I think people are getting that message. But the Hoosier Line's you know, ridership dropped 25%, which is part of the reason why it stopped. What are you hearing from people in your community? Why
overwhelmingly, you know, wanting this service back or wanting it to continue? You know, you do face the questions about, is this subsidized and can it pay for itself? And you know, you do have to look at, you know, your earlier guests talked about how other forms of mass transit are subsidized, and they exactly are. You know, I've said all along, we're going to see this issue shift as younger people rise into positions of power. When we first started having this discussion, and you know, a while back, you know, most of the people in power were from a generation that trains had come and gone. That idea was gone, and we needed to move on into something else. And now we see younger people, you know, rising into those positions and having more political influence, and that will start to change the discussion. There is no doubt about it. And that shifts a little bit every single day. And we're seeing that play out. I know in Crawfordsville we see that play out.
Are you hearing that in northern Indiana, Michael?
Oh, absolutely. The younger generation is demanding that we get with the times, that we provide them the flexibility, the amenities on the train, Wi-Fi on the train so they can work, the opportunities to bring bikes on the train so that they can take their bikes and ride them to the train or ride them from the train. You know, they are looking for better schedule opportunities. We can't provide the same type of service that we provided 20 years ago and just assume folks are going to come to the and ride the system. There's Uber and there's Lyft these days that are also new entrants to the market and are changing probably long term for the good for us. Once we need to drive our travel time down and increase our frequency, and our ridership models show that we double ridership, and it's pretty intuitive when you think about it. The expressways are jammed. They're not going to get any better. Even with automated driverless cars, you're still going to have vehicles on the road. So we need to resolve that issue and come up with at least an option for individuals, hopefully a better option, quicker, more seamless, and less expensive. Yeah. And it's actually safer. It's 18 times
more
dangerous to drive a car than it is to ride on a train.
But thank you so much for joining us today. Michael Noland and Todd Barton, Mayor of Crawfordsville, talking mass transportation on All In.